Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I am Maria Auler, Financial Analyst for Intersemit. With me here today for our earnings call and fireside chat is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and Marcos Zangari, our Head of Corporate Finance and Planning. The presentation will be followed by a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation is available through the webcast link that has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, we will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. A reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call or the financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intersemit's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2022 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intersemit makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intersemit disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intersemit second quarter financial report for a basic discussions of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. So, having said all that, let me kick the ball here and ask you, Paulo, to give us a quick overview of Intersemit's second quarter, please.
Good morning, Maria, and everyone. Pleasure to be here. Just refreshing what I said in our last call, that cement companies had weaker first quarter as inflationary pressures were not fully passed to prices, so that the margins and profitability faced some compression. Well, we clearly saw a reversion of that trend in the second quarter. Overall, we booked a top line of $522 million, 41% increase year over year. Better prices were the main driver for this jump in revenues. In fact, the average price of $83 per ton was 20% higher in comparison to the second quarter of last year. And volume of 5 million tons in the second quarter was also higher, 3% up year over year. Needless to say that costs continue to be under pressure, although we also started to see some easing in some countries. Therefore, adjusted EBITDA came nicely at $137 million, a 25% increase year over year. So our best second quarter for the last good years, and I guess since 2015. Reflecting this strong adjusted EBITDA, operational cash flow came at $141 million in comparison to the $75 million in the second quarter of last year. As expected, higher financial expenses penalized the free cash flow, although positive at $19 million for the quarter. Finally, net debt at $1,413 million imply a leverage of 2.9 times, so better than the last quarter, despite the $45 million dividends paid by Luma Negra and consequent 49% distribution leak to minority shareholders. So, in a nutshell, I could call that my highlights for the quarter.
Paulo, excellent, and thanks for this overview. When you talked about a top line of $522 million in the quarter, can you share some insights with regards to volumes and prices in the different geographies?
Sure. Refreshing the $522 million of sales. That was basically the result of a 3% volume increase year over year to 5 million tons and 20% average price increase year over year to $83 per ton. So looking at the different clusters in Brazil, Intersmith Brazil reached sales of $193 million, a 28% increase year over year. Volume-wise, Intersmith Brazil reflect the behavior of the cement industry in the country and booked a 6% volume drop year over year, with 2.2 million tons. Main reason for that was a tougher macroeconomic scenario, which was marked by high inflation, high interest rates, and growing household indebtedness, besides the reduction in new constructions coming from the drop on real estate launches. On the other hand, Intersmith Brazil was able to better manage its pricing policy through the continuity of its go-to-market strategy, prioritizing sales channels and customers of high potential, broadening the client base, and better using its logistics network. In fact, Intersmith Brazil active customer base reached almost 14,000 customers, an expansion of 14% year over year. As a result, its average price reached R$360 per ton or $73 per ton, a 25% increase in reais year over year, partially mitigating the volume drop and cost pressures. In Argentina, despite the poor macroeconomic conditions, including inflation of over 65%, I guess the highest in the last decades, households continue to allocate any income left into construction as a way to preserve the currency power. This mindset continues to support the strong demand from the retail sector in bags, and bulk cement posting the highest year-over-year growth, driven by a higher level of activity in private infrastructure projects, residential and industrial, and some public works at the municipal and provincial levels. Therefore, the second quarter was the second best in the history of the cement industry in Argentina, with a volume of 3.1 million tons, a 16% increase year over year. Once again, with sales of $238 million in the quarter, an outstanding 81% increase year over year, Luma Negra outperformed the industry with a volume of 1.7 million tons, a 19% growth year over year. Price-wise, despite the high inflation, Luma Negra was able to keep a price level slightly over $100 per ton, an 11% increase year over year by better managing its cement channels and full fulfillment of its customer base. Moving to our African cluster top line, let me pass the ball here to Zangari to share his views. Zangari?
Yeah, thank you, Paulo, and good morning, everyone. So let me give you some color on our sales in Africa. Overall, our revenues in the region posted a 4% growth year on year at $91 million, based on a well-executed commercial strategy and a balanced mix of heady and tailwinds. As you can see on page 6 of the presentation, we sold 1.1 million tons in Africa in the quarter, 2% more than last year. However, on a country level, we observed that the local volume variations were more pronounced. For instance, once again, Egypt maintained the positive momentum, recording 16% volume growth based on favorable demand in general, coupled with a more rational competitive environment that we have seen since the second semester of last year. On the other hand, for different reasons, our volumes decreased in Mozambique and South Africa by almost 14% and 7% respectively. In Mozambique, Although we had lower sales, that contraction is way softer than in the previous quarter. The difference is based on the fact that it was just in the second quarter of last year that a new competitor started its operations in the south of the country. So the comparison base is not as much distorted during this quarter as it was in the last ones, although it's still a bit impacted by that effect and also by a mild demand reduction. Meanwhile, in South Africa, we recorded increasing volumes in both May and June, but not enough to offset the impact on sales from the heavy rains and floods that hit our main market in April. So we ended up with that volume decrease around 7% in the quarter year on year. But excluding April sales, the volume would have increased by almost 7%. Moving to prices at our African operations, we saw price recovery to almost $75 per ton, 4% up year over year, despite the devaluation of the local currencies in the three countries. On a like-for-like basis, prices increased by 20% in the quarter. In local currency, it's in Egypt that we posted the highest expansion of average price, reaching 42% year on year, although it is still the lowest price among our geographies, showing that we still have room to improve our prices in Egypt. In South Africa, the strategy of price over cost is also in place, and our prices increased around 9%. Even in Mozambique, we finally reversed that price downturn adjustment cycle and accumulated a 10% increase year on year during this quarter and 5% in dollar terms.
Thank you, guys. It's really great to hear that. Despite the challenging macroeconomic environment, CCMH was able to manage its top line in a very healthy way. My next question is related to something we continue to see in the cement industry. It seems that despite the general price increase, it has not been enough to absorb the cost pressure in the industry, with the consequent impact on EBITDA. Is this also the case for Intercement?
Well, Mariam, yes and no. Needless to say that the huge jump on energy prices initiated an inflation wave in the whole world. Therefore, in the first quarter of the year, we really saw increases at a much higher level than prices increase. Consequently, in general, the cement industry saw a relevant contraction in margins, and that was no different for Intercement. However, on the second quarter, we saw that our operations started to face better dynamics between prices and costs, so that margins are starting to recover. In fact, just EBITDA margin was at 26.3% in the second quarter, was already better than the 23.9% margin in the first quarter, although still 3.2 percentage points below the second quarter of last year. As I mentioned in the beginning, our adjusted EBITDA reached $137 million, or a 25% increase, resulting in our best quarter since 2015. Naturally, that this trend varied by country. In Brazil, price increases partially mitigated the volume drop and cost pressures, so that Intercement Brazil was at $48 million in second quarter, so a level compared to the $49 million registered in the second quarter of last year. EBITDA margin of 25.1% showed a recovery of 7.7 percentage points over the first quarter, although still 6.8 percentage points below the second quarter of last year. In Argentina, despite the ongoing cost pressures, Rio Negra posted a record adjusted EBITDA of $71 million, so a 29% increase year over year, on the back of record sales volumes and great price level. Adjusted EBITDA margin remain at distinct level of 30%. Therefore, the energy cost increases were softened by the efficiency of the new Lamani plant and also the evolution of the exchange rate. Finally, in the African cluster, although sales were at $91 million, a 4% increase year over year, we saw that the overall cost pressure in the region was further penalized in South Africa by negative effects of April's heavy rains and floods, which consequent disruptions in logistics and production. Therefore, adjusted EBITDA came at $17 million in the quarter in comparison to the $20 million booked in the second quarter of last year. However, I must say that South Africa is presenting a quick recovery, and July was already a unique month on the back of price performance, record bag sales, and logistics savings. All in all, we can clearly see that not only inflation and cost increases are losing steam, but we also continue to manage our pricing policy so that an overall improvement in margins continue to be seen.
Really nice to see that, Paulo. With all these uncertainties on the macro front, Tricement was able to not only present a consistent top line, but also to post a record EBITDA of $137 million for a second quarter. Moving now to the below-the-line results, let me ask you, Zangari, what you should bear in mind on the second quarter?
Well, Maria, what first comes to my mind regarding our below-the-line results in the second quarter is the cash conversion, far above last year, especially because Brazil released some working capital in the period, in contrast to last year, when it was necessary to anticipate petcoke purchases in order to capture better pricing on it. On the other hand, our CapEx, basically investment in maintenance of the operations, was in line with last year, amounting to $33 million, while income taxes paid were a bit higher at $35 million, as taxable profits were higher in Argentina and Mozambique.
Zangari, besides working capital moves, CapEx, and taxes, any other movement below the line, including financial flows, that you could give us some additional color, please?
Yes, Maria, sure. As we mentioned in May, during April, we executed two other bilateral loans, one in Argentina and the other in Mozambique. That meets our mid-term financial strategy to maximize debt at it. Held at the opcos instead of at the holdcos in order to improve our capital structure in the operational level and overall. The new loan in Argentina amounted to $56 million, and the proceeds were used to distribute dividends for both Intercement and minority shareholders. It's also important to mention that even after paying out dividends, Loma Negra's financial leverage is still virtually zero. And slightly above that after July, once we had another distribution of dividends as a subsequent event. The issuance in Mozambique amounted to 1 billion meticais, the local currency, equivalent to $16 million, and the funds were used to repay some intra-group debt to holdcos. Moving to interest expenses disbursement, it totaled $71 million during the quarter, an increase of $43 million, mostly related to the debentures due to the higher interest rates in Brazil, CDI, at 13.15% in June of this year versus 4.15% in June last year. Lastly, in the second quarter, we had a $30 million payment of dividends, mostly to Loma Negra, as I mentioned, minority shareholders, but also to the preferred shareholder on our hydroelectric power generation business in Brazil. Reflecting all those cash movements, Intercement ended the second quarter of the year with a cash position of $230 million and a net debt of $1.413 million, an increase of almost 9% over the end of 2021. Mostly due to the FX variation over the debt denominated in Brazilian real, given its appreciation in the period. In other words, a non-cash debt impact, and also higher payment of interests and dividends. As a result of this higher debt metric by FX variation, Intercement posted a financial leverage of 2.9 times adjusted EBITDA, similar to the level we reached by the end of last year and slightly better than in March, as Paulo has mentioned.
Great, Zanga. Good to see that we continue to deliver on our capital structure, implying on a better capital allocation efficiency, now with dividends payment of $45 million by Loma Negra. Paulo, I know that Intercement does not provide any quantitative guidance, but perhaps you could share a quick view for the rest of the year, please.
Well, Maria, when we thought that we would live without black swans for some time, we saw that we were totally wrong, as we saw three in a row, starting with the COVID pandemic and the consequent lockdown with all the further consequences, the Russia and Ukraine conflict and the consequent inflation and disruptions on the supply chains, and the Argentinian political and economic crisis with the related FX market constraints. Therefore, the only certainty that we have is really that we shall continue to face some important challenges and uncertainties all around. At the same time, cost increases are losing steam all over, as I said. Additionally, we continue to see some positive developments in our biggest market, Brazil, such as deflation in July, lowest unemployment level since 2015, GDP growth perspective of over 2%, improvements in the Casa Verde Amarela housing program, in the $600 emergency aid to less favored people. In Argentina, cement demand is going through a very solid moment, and Loma Negra is on track to set a new historical record on volume. In Africa, Mozambique is moving as planned, while South Africa is presenting a remarkable recovery, and Egypt continues to surprise on the positive side. Therefore, we continue to see 2022 as a year to defend the position that we built last year. Therefore, despite a stable volume, or perhaps slightly lower in the case of Brazil, we shall see an EBITDA level slightly above the one we posted last year. In terms of free cash flow, needless to say that improvements in working capital, lighter capex, and lower tax burden shall be more than offset by higher interest expenses. Therefore, a slightly better free cash flow will be reverted after the dividends of $126 million paid by Loma Negra and the consequent leak to minorities. As I said last time, a difficult year, yes, but very far away from being a bad one.
Thanks, Paulo. Just before a break for Q&A, a couple of points that I'm certainly see some interest of our audience. To start with, I see that Intercement closed the second quarter with a cash position equivalent to $230 million. Angari, please, could we have a breakdown by the different perimeters?
Okay. Out of the total of $230 million, we had $58 million at Intercement Brazil, $106 million at Loma Negra in Argentina, $32 million at the African cluster, and $34 million at the corporate level.
Thanks, Zanga. Another point I'm curious about, Paulo, is the paradox between Intercement bonds and the company's performance. For example, a couple of weeks ago, the yield peaked at over 37% with a price at 58. But even now, we are seeing a price around 75 and yield slightly under 23%. Last time when yield was at around 14%, you commented on that. And now that the yield has increased even more, what's your view on that?
Well, no doubt that in the long run, the financial market tends to move in a rational way. However, taking a short-term view, there are some moments where the market is anything but rational. What you said is totally right. From a rational point of view, as I mentioned last time, Intercement has now a B- rating by our rating agency, S&P and Fitch. However, taking a closer look at our current credit metrics, one will conclude that they are better than the ones we had some years ago when the company was rated a double B. Just an example, current leverage is lower than 3 times the lowest level in the last 10 years or so. Even more interesting when we remember that in 2016, it reached a peak of 6.4 times, or perhaps almost 5 times in 2018. So anyway, however, at the same time, I can certainly understand the kind of, let's say, panic that took over the financial market recently. Extrapolating that to our bonds, investors may think, well, the paper has a sizable volatility and low liquidity. On the top of that, the paper matures in July of 24, and in case the company does not refinance it, the three local banks can exercise the option in May of 24 and call the debentures early maturity. This is totally true. However, considering the results and great turnaround we implemented at Intercement, I really do not see why investors and banks should break their relationship with the company. Just out of the blue, let me share here some points that anyone look at Intercement should have in mind. I mean, first, the scale of our business and highly relevant position Intercement has as leader or vice leader in Argentina and Brazil, two key countries in Latin America with great cement needs to fulfill its housing deficit and infrastructure coming through the next years, you know, irrespective of any presidential outcome. I mean, second, our deleveraging story with leverage ratio 2 times lower than the pre-pandemic level, always exceeding, you know, the performance that were in the business plan aligned with the banks holding the debentures. Third, I mean, despite some macro headwinds, Brazil and Argentina volumes, pricing and margin dynamics continue with favorable trends, and our African business continues on a positive territory, albeit small relative to the core jurisdictions. We continue to keep a healthy liquidity position and manageable maturity profile, especially now that we have structured dividends out of Argentina, therefore with no imminent repayment pressure. Fifth, we continue on our successful implementation route of the 5 steps of our Penta financial strategy, which includes not only the 24 bonds refinancing, but also the IPO of Intercement Brazil, likely towards the end of next year, and the strategic options of our African cluster. And sixth, and finally, our willingness to treat all lenders and investors with fairness to make sure we can establish an adequate balance between key credit constituents down the road. So in a nutshell, Mario, great question. And even with my gray hair, I can certainly say that I still have to learn a lot, as sometimes it's almost impossible to understand the financial markets.
Paulo, thanks for sharing your view on Intercement bonds. Before we open the floor for Q&A, just a last question here. Look at Intercement holding perimeter. On one hand, we have $550 million of outstanding bonds plus 2 billion reais of debentures. That is equivalent to $385 million. therefore a total debt of around $935 million. On the other hand, we have the service of this debt, $31 million a year for the bonds, and considering the current interest level in Brazil, another $64 million a year to service the debentures. So we are talking about $95 million a year of interest that the holding has to face. How do you see that, Paulo?
Well, Maria, many thanks really for the question, as I believe this is one of the points that make our investors a bit nervous, let's put it this way. But let us break this puzzle in pieces. First, let's keep in mind that the 90 to 95 million of interest, but let's round it up to $100 million so that we can include also some expenses in there at the holding perimeter. So at the business unit level, we have, first, I mean, in Brazil, let's assume an EBITDA level of $175 million to $190 million. Let's also consider an annual volume of 10 million tons for InterCement Brazil and a $5 per ton in terms of maintenance capex. Therefore, we are talking about another $50 million of maintenance capex for InterCement Brazil. And finally, let's also consider another $85 million for interest related to the 2.7 billion reais local debentures. Therefore, in terms of InterCement Brazil, we are talking about a cash surplus of $40 to $55 million a year. In Argentina, we are counting on dividends of around $100 million a year or so. Let's remember that so far this year, Luma Negra has paid $126 million. So something also very reasonable. And finally, in terms of Africa, an EBITDA level of $70 to $80 million. So let's consider an annual volume of 4.5 to 5 million tons for the African cluster and $4 per ton in terms of maintenance capex, since some of the plants are not integrated. Therefore, another $20 million of maintenance capex for the African operations. Finally, let's also consider another $7 million of interest related to the $60 million of local debt at the African cluster. Therefore, for the African operations, we are talking about a cash surplus of, $40, $50 million. So all in all, we are talking about a cash surplus from the operating companies in Brazil and Africa of $80 to $105 million. So, as I mentioned, 40 to 45 from InterCement Brazil, 45 to 50 from Africa. On the top of that, it's reasonable to consider another $100 million in dividends from Luma Negra. Therefore, when we add them all together, there is no doubt that InterCement debt at the holding perimeter can be served. In order to do that, basically we use three different instruments, or we could at least consider three different instruments. First, the traditional dividends, especially in the case of Luma Negra. Second, some intercompany loans. And third, potential capital reduction. So all of them, they would achieve the same objective. So hope that helps to address any concerns in a time of high interest rates, something that should not perpetuate. And yes, we cannot forget that the strategic moves that InterCement Brazil and the African operations are considering in the near future.
Thanks, Paulo. Great to hear this. I guess we could open the floor for questions for our investors, analysts, and bankers. And I would like to remember all that if you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast.
So let's start with the question from Nicolas. Is the expectation that the refinancing would be clean and secured or secured still possible? So Nicholas is asking Paulo about the conditions that we are foreseeing for a refinancing of the bonds.
Well, great question. And there are some questions related to that. But basically, as I mentioned before, the idea is making sure that we can treat all investors and creditors in a most fair way. Therefore, very, very likely, we are going to have secured refinancing because the banks, they also have some collateral for the debentures. In case we are going to be using the Brazilian plants or the Luma Negra shares as collateral, is still to be decided. As talking to some bondholders, it seems that there's no clear preference. Therefore, we must have flexibility here on which one we should be allocating as collateral for the new bonds. And in terms of if there's going to be a haircut or if it's a haircut on or off the table, no, this is totally out of question. Again, I guess that we can assure that first, we are not going to have any haircut. Second, from an economic point of view, interest should be higher than what we have today, 575. And third, we are going to have some collateral on that paper. So those 3 points, you can consider them as done.
Great.
Perhaps just another point on completing the answer, because I can see some other questions with regards to timing. Important to note here that although the market's not in the most favorable point in time as we speak, the company is keeping its readiness status, if you like, making sure that whenever we see that there is a kind of a decent window in order to tap the market and build up a kind of win-win situation with the bondholders, we are going to move forward. Therefore, you know, if it's going to be now in this during the third quarter or fourth quarter or even next year, is still to be decided. The point is making sure that the company is ready.
So next question is from Paulo Bilancian regarding whether there will be more leverage in those entities that are less levered in the group.
Well, the idea is making sure that we can optimize the capital structure of our group. And what we are seeing until last year and part of this year is that all the tax payments that have been occurring, they are taking place at the operating companies level, especially at Luma Negra. Therefore, by creating some financial expenses at the operating companies level, we can somehow mitigate the income tax to be paid and therefore circulate more cash within the group. Especially in the case of Luma Negra, I guess that we have analyzed a series of potential strategic investments. But really, after all the analysis that we did, we do see that the best use of cash today for Luma Negra is really in the hands of shareholders. Therefore, this is what the company is doing. And again, if you take a look at the EBITDA level of Luma Negra, $200 million a year, if you talk about a leverage of 2.5 times, I guess that we would be talking about $500-600 million in terms of debt that Luma Negra could leverage itself. Again, not saying that the company is going to be doing that, but just to show the kind of potential that Luma Negra has.
Thank you, Paulo. We are also taking a question from Matthias, who asked about any possibility of bonds buyback and whether we could still leverage Intersemit Brazil.
Yeah, I guess that's important to make sure that any further leverage on Intersemit Brazil is going to imply not only a kind of a reduction of the equity value for IPO purpose. Therefore, we have to be mindful of that. But also, we have some covenants at the new debentures that we issue at Intersemit Brazil that we really want to keep a kind of a safety margin in there. Therefore, the idea is not to leverage further the Brazilian subsidiary. With regards to the potential buyback of our bonds, again, just refreshing, out of the initial offer of $750 million, we have already buyback almost 200, so there are $551 million outstanding in the market. And although we are not planning to buy or not to buy at this point in time, this is something that we always keep on our radar. And in case there are some rational and reasons to move forward with that, yes, I mean, we could benefit from that opportunity.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, another question we have is from Sergio, who asked about what we mentioned regarding the dividend payments. It's being increased, and whether we could use it to repay debt.
That's a good question. And again, remember that we are not stamping each money in order to say, well, this goes here or this goes there. I mean, when we move money up to the holding company, we want to make sure that first we can service our debt. And second, in case there are some extremely short-term debt, we paid them. And that was precisely what we did in January. We had a maturity small loan from International Bank, another one in March, and another one in April. Yeah. Therefore, now basically we do not have them any longer. Therefore, again, in case we do have any kind of a surplus in the cash position at the holding level, we could certainly consider, the best use of that money, not only in terms of buyback in bonds, but perhaps even, pay some of the bonds or the debentures. But no, we are still far away from there.
Okay. Okay, now next question comes from Jacob. Are we assuming $100 million dividends from Argentina paid in total or amount received by Intersemit Holding on the 51%?
Yeah, good question, Jacob. Sorry that was not clear, but always we are talking about a total dividends, and therefore Intersemit would be allowed to have, almost 52% of that. So, but again, we are assuming as a kind of a minimum amount. We cannot forget that based on previous years, because Luma Negra, this is the first year that is paying dividends since the company went public in 2017. Therefore, it has a potential position to pay more than $400 million in dividends. It has, book entries for that for past profits that were not paid. Again, not saying that we are going to be doing that, but anyway, out of what I said here, our share, Intersemit share, would be almost 52%.
Thank you, Paulo. Paulo, could you also elaborate on how we plan to achieve those 100 million dividends, considering FX restrictions? That's a question from Matthias.
Well, basically, Matthias, thanks for the question. We would be following the same kind of structure that or structures that we use this year in order to pay the first dividends of $45 million and also to pay the second dividends of $81 million. So I guess that the market end up, you know, adjusting itself, and therefore always there are some kind of mechanics in order to make sure that that could be executed. I guess the key point here to be mindful and to take care is that any structure should not involve, should not touch the international level of reserves of the Argentinian government. So we do respect that. Make sure that we can also contribute to the best. Or having said that, I guess that we can structure ways to pay dividends that you know are not going to affect the Argentinian government.
Perfect. Thanks, Paulo, again. There's another question here from Sean asking about the annual cash interest expense that we have mentioned. Sean, that was $95 million in annual interests, okay?
Yeah.
Next question comes from Eliseo asking us about the loan we took in Argentina, which is a short-term maturity, 180 days. He asks whether we'll pay it at the official FX rate. Paulo?
Yeah, the second dividend that was declared this year, the recent one of $81 million, basically Luma Negra took a kind of offshore loan, but in the country it had a pesos equivalent to $60 million. So we took another portion in local debt in pesos, and therefore with a total of around 160 million pesos, equivalent to $160 million. Basically, the company used a third party in order to do a kind of a blue chip swap, or similar to a blue chip swap, a party that you know, was willing to receive pesos locally and give dollars outside. So Luma Negra has paid that $80 million loan that took outside and has now no local debt in pesos.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Okay, let's move on to the next one from Mike. He asks us about the slowdown in demand in Brazil, whether it's maybe partially due to the substantial price increases, and whether we are expecting to increase prices more slowly in the second half, given the smaller increase in fuel costs.
Well, I guess that first it's important to see that despite the recovery in margins that we saw in the second quarter, it's still not in the level that the, you know, cement companies in Brazil were operating recently, or at least until last year. And second, what we see is that the cement average price per ton in Brazil is still far below an international level, or even, you know, prices that we had in the past year in Brazil. And third, when we see the kind of in order to justify a new investment in a new plant in Brazil, we also conclude that there is still a huge for price increases. When you put that together, just to look at the industry itself, and also when you consider that cement is, 3-4% of the overall cost of a new construction, so peanuts, it's easy to see that yes, there is room for price adjustments, especially in a phase now that the structure of the Brazilian cement industry has changed dramatically. Therefore, I believe that yes, we shall continue to see price adjustments, especially because of the recent also M&A. Minimum return for their investment. So when you ponder all those factors together, I firmly believe that the price shall continue to move up in order to return to a good margin level.
Okay, thanks. Okay, going on. Kishert asked us about the 2.95% stake in Estreito that we acquired during this quarter for almost $9 million, and whether we should anticipate to have more of those transactions in the short, medium term. So, Richard, actually, that was an opportunity that we had to optimize our capital structure by freeing up the trapped cash in debt hydroelectric power plant company, and then we did so. And we don't expect to have that transaction in the short term. Next question comes from Samuel asking on our conviction in the continued strength of the Argentinian cement market, given a high proportion of demand coming from real state retail market and being driven by inflation protection. Is this sustainable, Paulo?
Hey, hi, Sam. So thanks for the question. Well, what we are seeing, year after year, month after month, and especially this year, is that the demand in Argentina is extremely strong. As I said, I mean, the industry has broke its last month, and this is a year where, volume should be, if not the best, but one of the best volumes in the last decade. And especially for Loma Negra, as I said, the company is on track in order to reach a new volume record. If this is sustainable, I would say that it looks like, because on one hand, in case we continue with this high inflation, this is where people, they put their money because of the lack of financial instruments that are really dollar linked. On the other hand, in case inflation starts to easily, I guess that especially for the next presidential elections in 23, I guess that we are going to have more room for even more infrastructure projects, and therefore should also push in this direction, besides the usual need of to tap the housing debt. Therefore, what we are seeing, yes, and we cannot forget also part of the wealth Argentina, that in case they decide to bring money into the country, money that is offshore, for every dollar outside, they make at least $2 in Argentina. And therefore, the cost for construction becomes very, very cheap for these people.
Yeah, pretty clear. Oh, thanks. So let's move on. Answering to Eliseo, his question regarding the collateral that we have pledged in the debentures and bank debt. Eliseu, the debentures have the LOMA shares as collateral, and the bank debts or the bilateral loans we have are clean, okay, no collateral. You also asked about the leverage in LOMA. Why not tap in local markets? Actually, LOMA Negra is doing so right now. So they are already taking their loans in pesos locally. And your question regarding the dividends from Holdco this year, whether we're going to pay more. Actually, we have not paid dividends from Holdco to our controlling shareholders. We have just paid what we see as dividends paid from our consolidated figures are those payments or distribution leakages to minority interests, okay, from LOMA Negra and also for the minority interests on the hydroelectric power generation companies. And that's it.
Well, Paulo and Zanga, I guess we had a very interesting, insightful morning. So thank you.
Definitely, Maria. Thank you again for hosting this. It would be great to come back in the next quarter. Thank you all.
Maria and Zangari, also enjoying our morning. So let me thank you all for being with us and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you all for joining today and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.